Your testimony makes it all possible.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else present today that hasn't signed the roster and wishes to make a statement on this subject? Oh, here it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I signed the wrong roster.
You just brought another one up there.
My name is Peter Freilich, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General. You've probably gathered from the number and diversity of the position papers and fiscal notes and so on that there is not a unified, as of yet anyway, a unified administration position on this bill. There's a number of departmental positions that are different but have a lot in common with each other. The Department of Law's position is, of course, unique. And we're essentially neutral. We don't have hearings within the Department of Law. Of course, we represent client agencies at times in hearings, and we often are called on to defend decisions, administrative decisions, which come out of hearings if they are appealed to court. On the one hand, we do have a basic sympathy with the intent of the bill and the sorts of considerations that Representative Tischer discussed and were emphasized by the foster parent witnesses. It seems equitable, and it sounds like good public policy. On the other hand, we also share the concerns that have been expressed by some of our client agencies, and particularly the two that you heard from, the labor and revenue departments. There is a danger that holding out a pot for attorney's fees is going to escalate the level of battle in some of these hearings that now take place in an informal way, and justice is essentially done. Permanent fund dividend eligibility application disputes, the labor examples, and so on. That's a problem. There's going to be more grounds for appeal because attorney's fees, the amount, the reasonableness of amounts of awards, and the prevailing party issues are frequently grounds for appeals in court cases, and we presume that they would also be grounds here. And, of course, we also are concerned that as more people, we think this bill would encourage people to use attorneys in administrative proceedings, and as that happens, the Department of Law, of course, would be called on more frequently by our clients to represent them. It's the typical, if you bring in an attorney, I'm going to bring mine. Mr. Holland had that reaction. Well, in many cases, the state does not start off with an attorney and will not use one in an administrative proceeding unless the citizen involved brings his in. So at any rate, that's sort of the balancing, which is the reason for the Department of Law's neutrality here. We do appreciate the what we see as the improvement of this bill over last year's version, so to speak, HB 408. And of course, as you probably are aware, this isn't a new idea. I mean, I think there was the year before's version as well. The biggest improvement is the narrowing down to actual proceedings, whereas 408 dealt with inquiries, investigations, and so on, much too broad. We believe that this bill could be further improved in a couple respects. The two main ones have been mentioned. The idea of narrowing it further to Administrative Procedure Act hearings. Now, those are the hearings where hearing officers are always attorneys, because the Administrative Procedure Act says that hearing officers should be appointed by the governor and should be licensed. I don't remember the exact language, but they must be attorneys admitted to practice. So that's where your judges got legal training. The other improvement that we would recommend is the idea of a lid. Now, the previous bill, 408, did have that. It said 75, no more than $75 an hour or a total of $5,000. Maybe a different number is appropriate, but at any rate, I do think there should be a top end. And a couple of minor, or well, one, all, one additional recommendation that goes along with narrowing it to the Administrative Procedure Act is perhaps placing the section in the Administrative Procedure Act, 4462, instead of Title IX. The way the bill was written, it would be in a chapter that deals with court proceedings where the state is a party. I think that might be inappropriate. It would be more clear if it was in the Administrative Procedure Act, particularly if that narrowing was accomplished. We would also recommend a couple less important improvements, but also I believe improvements, the reinsertion of the word reasonableness, of the word reasonable, that is the limitation of reasonableness on attorney's fees, costs and reasonable attorney's fees, not to exceed X amount. And also the idea of making it possible for the award to go either way. Whoever the prevailing party would be entitled to an award of reasonable costs and attorney's fees. I think that with those improvements that this bill could make a lot more sense. And I've discussed a couple of these ideas with Representative Tischer's staff and would be willing. I did throw together a proposed committee substitute, which was a bit hasty, and just in reading it while I was waiting to testify, I've had some second thoughts about particularly my rewrite of what I did was rewrite A and B and leave the rest of it the same. And in B, my only rewrite was to add the sentence establishing the limit that was from 408. But I can distribute this or maybe I'll provide it to staff, and I would be glad to work with any staff who is interested in working on a committee substitute.
Well, we have two staff attorneys and having to work through them.
And with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions you have.
President Wisner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The thing that concerns me about this is how are you going to work in Rule 82 into this, where the judge has authority to award attorney fees, isn't it? And I don't think you can do it legally here under this administrative setup.
John, read the sentence there. It says that it will be determined by the administrator with reference to the Rule 82.
I think
if,
it's,
if you can't agree on that, they will then appeal it to the Superior Court.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Will
they ask the other gentleman a question here too, and will he get away from it or not? Let's still entertain that. I think to me like that would be the biggest area we may run into problems on there. I will say this, that I think it's past due something being done about it. I can cite several cases.
Representative Tischer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me, I didn't catch your name.
Freilich.
Mr. Freilich. I appreciate your comments regarding to the insertion of, quote, reasonable fees. And I honestly would give some at least cursory consideration of use of that term, as you mentioned in this bill, provided that you could draft some language that would establish some reasonableness as it pertains to the state agency, the Department of Law, and any other state involvement in the prosecution of the case. How could you do that so that we could make it equal if it's going to be reasonable fees in terms of the respondent? How could we equally place a burden on the state to provide only reasonableness as far as the time involved and so forth in investigations in the research, the legal advice, even to the, how many times a day do you have the phone ring and some agency, some member of some agency in the state picks up the phone and calls you and says, Mr. Frelick, could you give me some information dealing with state statute, state law, your so forth, and you orally relate that information as best your knowledge. And you know, an attorney, normally when they get those types of calls, they have this little log sheet by their telephone, and they write down increments of 5 to 15 minutes of how much time they spend on every case. And if a person calls up, the time that is spent on that telephone call is charged to that client. The advice that is given over the telephone, even if it's at a restaurant, they write it down, and they have an obligation to their firm, if you will, to charge their time off to certain clients, whoever it happens to be. Now, how could you develop some sort of language that would make all this stuff equal?
Well, Representative Tischer, I'm really not sure how I would do that, and I'm not sure that it's necessary, although perhaps just your perception that it is means that something is necessary.
But from the standpoint of John Q. Public, as a private citizen, you know, the guy who washes clothes and takes care of babies and goes to the movies and so forth and so on, it certainly is reasonable from that standpoint. From your professional standpoint, it probably doesn't mean a damn thing. But it does mean something to the folks out there. Let's make it equal. How can you make it equal? We're trying to make it equal here. You've got the bank of attorneys, you've got the experts in the regulations and so forth that work by those regulations. One day after another, that's their entire scope of work. And here these guys out here have no conception of even what they read, much less in some instances, until somebody discovers something that they're accused of, and then they got to get busy and search. If a man who earns $95 an hour for a particular firm has to spend 10 hours of his own time researching at the library, at law books and so forth to try to develop a case for themselves, how equal is it for him to take off those hours of work at $95 an hour when you can do it free of charge to any agency?
Well, there's a couple responses that occur to me.
Would it be better for him to pick up a telephone and call an attorney and say, hey, you have to do this for me because I haven't got the time, but I'm being wrongfully accused?
Well, it's one thing that occurs to me is it still costs the state money and attorney time, even though our attorneys, like myself, are not paid by the hour. I mean, when we spend time, we have fixed resources, and when we spend time on one thing, we can't spend it on another, and sometimes we don't have the luxury of really prioritizing, and so those things, you know, working on a license revocation for a foster home may be taking away from a attorney time on a multi-million dollar tax case or whatever. So, I mean, it does cost the state money. So there's that built-in reasonableness limitation. And there's also the pervasive requirement of reasonableness of all government action. If agencies are not reasonable, they are, quote, in legalese, abusing their discretion, they can be incurring liability to the state. The officials can possibly be incurring personal liability outside of their official capacity, and they certainly are causing a vulnerability for reversal on appeal. If an agency is abusing its discretion, that is acting unreasonably, what it does in acting that way isn't going to stand up in court.
Yes,
and so there's all those built-in reasonableness controls, I think.
Someone told me one time, Mr. Frelick, and I think it's a very true statement, that the system protects the system. And in the case that you just noted, what penalties would an agency incur for itself if they violated their own rules, regulations, and so forth, as you just mentioned? What action does the private citizen have in real terms of challenging those actions?
Well,
there's one person here and there's 500 here. Who's going to win?
Sometimes the one wins. The numbers don't always control, but...
Then if that's the case, then this one person who is really unbalanced, if you're talking about this, in a balance scale here, there's 500 over here and there's one person here, then certainly, if that person does finally win, would you not agree that there should be some reward for that winning outside of clearing the person's name? That certainly is a reward. But the expense involved in that certainly should be paid for, don't you think? Not
well,
by him, but by the person who, by the persons who brought on that brought on the suit in the first place.
I think I agree with that in principle, and I think maybe you weren't here when I started my comments, and I did say that the Department of Law is in sympathy with that basic policy equity rationale. Partly because in our court system, winners are entitled to costs. Our state is the only state in the union, I believe, that provides that. But if our court system does, then there is some logic to, well, why don't our administrative agencies? But on the other hand, if you assume that agencies are always acting in their perception of the public interest, why should they be penalized for pursuing that goal?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, and stop me if I'm dragging this on too far, just let me know. I could argue this for probably 20 hours.
Yeah, I wanted to have a discussion with him after the committee meeting. Mr. Brown, issue, we have one more person signed to testify, and I'm already late, and I just sent a note to the courtroom across the street that I'd be a few minutes late. But if your remarks can be kept short, I'd like to take them for the record today, Mr. Brown.
Thank you.
And if you engage in a discussion with Representative Fisher afterwards, perhaps we can work that out.
Well, I'm sure
you could at that time explain how Relay 2 works, what's contained in there. Most of her questions can be answered in an explanation of the courtroom. The question she's asked, she's obviously not aware how the courtroom is and what it is. Mr. Brown, since we are recording electronically, can you please state your name and the record prior to your comment, sir? And I hate to ask you to be brief, but
I'm Bill Brown with Division Motor Vehicles, and basically we agree with most of the comments made by the three previous state agencies. But our problem is something else. We do agree with the concept of the bill, and we do agree with the intent. And our problem lies with what means prevail. And the reason I would say that is if we revoke, we handle it basically by statute rather than by regulation. And we are required by law to revoke somebody who's arrested for drunk driving and blows .10 or above. That person then has the right by statute to ask for an administrative hearing for a limited license. We are required by law to issue that limited license if the guy meets certain criteria. If we issue that limited license, then that person is prevailing, is possibly prevailing, because he got exactly what he asked for out of that administrative hearing. The other type of situations, of course, if we register a vehicle because a person shows sufficient evidence that he owns that vehicle, or sufficient, we feel was sufficient. Somebody else walks into the office and says they own that vehicle, and therefore we must have an administrative hearing to determine the ownership of the vehicle. Whoever then we grant the title to that vehicle would be prevailing in the hearing, even though it's a hearing not as a result of any action we requested or any action that we took. But we have to revoke then the title to one of the individuals. The other type of situation, of course, that's mainly our problem, and the other ones are mentioned in the position paper, and so that's our concern in regards to the bill is what means by prevail. If the suggestion of the previous people in regards to covering only those by the Administrative Procedures Act is amended to cover them, then that would solve our problem.
Yeah, I think most of your stuff can be handled. I think the thrust of the sponsors' efforts here are to handle things that result in a civil penalty or in a tax or in a disenfranchisement, if you will. And the things that you mentioned, of course, obviously don't result in any disenfranchisement. They like in the license case, you give it to the right guy.
Right.
But the adversary in the proceedings is not the state in that case. Or if you hear a case such as you described to give a guy back a conditional license, you're not acting as the adversary in that case. He's already committed the crime for which he lost the license. You're actually acting as a, you know, restoring part of it. I don't believe the sponsor intended to even infer that those things would be part of it. And I, quite frankly, you know, reading it, can't see how you can, or how they can even be thought to be included. I would think your department, if of all the departments, would be kept more or less clear of this.
We would agree with what you've stated as far as that's where we feel it should go. However, after reading the bill involving revocation of a license, we looked at that as a driver's license also, and we were just unsure.
Perhaps we can tie that up so that we really galvanize that inference so that was out. I think the whole thrust of it is to make sure that there is some recourse for the Bernie Hollands and some recourse for the, you know, I suppose I get as much or more correspondence from people asking me to help them out here because I got the guts to stick my neck out and do it. And an awful lot of these people that I go to bat for in these various agencies, the Department of Labor seems to have been one that has gotten a lot of it, although the Department of Public Safety just lately has come in for a number of complaints. But in almost all cases, once I get involved, the administration backs off. Because they're wrong, and they realize that the legislator come down there, and all of a sudden there's you know, they're not picking on Sam Spade Public anymore that has nothing and is nobody, and they can just push them down. And that's the shame of it all. The state, by virtue of what it is, who it is, and where it is, chooses to disenfranchise these people, and I think that's what this legislation is aimed at bringing equal footing to these people, and all, I think, personally, and a lot of this hogwash brought to this table by people trying to defend their departments is just exactly that, hogwash. I think in most cases they think twice before they moved on a procedure to disenfranchise one of Alaska's citizens if they knew he was on equal footing. They choose to do that because they know that the footing is not equal when they start. Again, I think that's, I hope I'm not misinterpreting your thrust, but I believe that's the thrust of this legislation, is to even things out and to stop this. And I don't believe your department is going to be affected by it at all. Thank you, Mr. President. I hate to do this. We've dragged along. The testimony's been good. I really thank each one of you for coming here. I do think that the Department of Law, if we could work on it a little bit, the same questions arose in my mind about Title 44, about it being in there instead of mine. Although it doesn't really make any difference where it is in the statutes, as long as it's clear.
As long as people can find it.
That's right. It might fit better into 25 or 44. Part of the Administrative Procedures Act does wrap kind of even over into there. So if you could work with the staff attorneys, I'll, as quick as I can, get back to them. And I certainly thank everybody for coming in, and if there's nothing further, we'll stand adjourned at 1:30 tomorrow.